I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday Friday. We close out the week with a look at Under Armour's expanding presence in Baltimore and the role of the company's CEO, Kevin Plank, in the city's future. Joanna Sullivan, editor of the Baltimore Business Journal, and architect and commentator Klaus Philipson compare notes during that segment of the show. Also ahead today, a chat about last night's Ravens-Pittsburgh game with Sports at Large commentator Milton Kent and Stan Charles of PressBox. Guitarist Flavio Sala is back, and we get an update on the storms headed our way this weekend. Also, with the release of Ridley Scott's The Martian starring Matt Damon, film critic Christopher Llewellyn Reed leads a discussion of movies about space exploration through the years. It's Midday Friday. It starts after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Rodericks here.
Tucker for the victory, for the first win of the year for the Ravens, and Tucker's kick is good.
Justin Tucker kicked a 52-yard field goal in overtime to give the Baltimore Ravens a 23-20 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Ravens' first win against three losses. Sports commentators Milton Kent and Stan Charles will join us to talk about that game and the Ravens' prospects for the remainder of the season. Guitarist Flavio Sala is back to entertain us, and we'll tell you about a couple of cool things happening this weekend, one in Baltimore's Little Italy, the other in Chestertown on Maryland's Eastern Shore, despite the weather forecast. So we try to accentuate the positive here during the show today, despite the weather. But how is the weather looking for the weekend? Governor Larry Hogan declared a state of emergency yesterday with forecasts that Hurricane Joaquin could hit the mid-Atlantic. Scott Dance has been tracking the storm for the Baltimore Sun. My colleague from Calvin Street joins us for a quick update. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Dan.
So how's it looking? It's headed out to sea, is it?
Yeah, it's. I keep saying that when I look at the forecast map at the National Hurricane Center, it's looking less and less like something that I would even really write about. But that's not totally separate from that. We are getting a lot of rain today. We have a flash flood watch, through tomorrow morning. So. All the officials keep emphasizing that, that the hurricane could still come closer. They still, are shifting that forecast cone around. So we'll see.
So the state of emergency stands until the governor decides to take it off, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they probably won't lift that until, we're really sure there's an all clear. And just looking at all these, National Weather Service forecast discussions, all this, meteorological jargon in there. They definitely are keeping the possibility that it could shift back towards the coast. But for the Baltimore area, we look pretty good. Ocean City maybe still a little bit at risk.
All right, Scott. Thank you very much. So no hurricane, hopefully, but a lot of rain over the next couple of days.
Yeah.
Thank you, Scott Dance, who covers the weather for us at the Baltimore Sun. I have to take a quick phone call here from Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger, who surprised me with a call here at the top of the show. Congressman, how you doing?
Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Oh, I'm good. It's my last day hosting Midday today. I guess
well,
know
that. Why I'm calling. But first thing, let's acknowledge that our team, the Ravens, won last night. It was close.
Yeah.
But it's a really positive day for Baltimore today. I just want to call to acknowledge the fact it's your last day. And I know I've said this to you before. You're one of my wife's favorites as far as journalism now. And I just want to say how much I appreciate what you've done for Baltimore. You talk about Baltimore communities. You talk about the little guy. And you're always talking about things that are fair. You and I haven't always agreed on the issues, but I feel as someone who's covered by a lot of people in the media, you always give anybody their point of view and you respect that, even though you might disagree with it. So I just wanted to say we're going to miss you. I think Baltimore is going to miss your show. You're going to still be writing for the Sun paper, and we're all going to look forward to your insight and what we need to do. But there are not many people out there that really understand how important it is, our town and how Baltimore and our area is, and I think you're one of them. You, Michael Lesker, reporters like that who really cared about the people living in our community. So that's all I want to say, and good luck and what you do. You're going to keep writing. You are going to keep writing for the Sun Fan.
Oh yeah,
correct?
Yeah. Still writing my column, and we've added a blog too. So I'll be posting in the blog as well. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, look forward to it. And it's just calling to say I respect you. Again, we don't always agree, but that's not your job and my job. Your job is just to write the facts, and I believe you're always fair. So
Dutch, thank you.
Good luck with whatever you do.
Thank you very much.
By the way, can I say something? I was listening when I was waiting to come on about you're going to have Scott Plank. There's another positive thing in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Kevin or Scott?
We're going to be talking about them in a moment.
Well, the Planks and Kevin, what he's done with Under Armour, gives so much hope to Baltimore for jobs and caring about it. And it's just very positive that we have people like that because Baltimore is on a roll, including the Ravens, by the way. Take care.
Hope you're right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the call, Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger. As we've reported and discussed on this show, and as Dutch Ruppersberger just mentioned, the Baltimore-based sports apparel company Under Armour is looking to expand to a larger headquarters campus at Port Covington, which is a post-industrial stretch on the southern rim of the city. But what will happen there is not just about shoes, hoodies, and leggings. The company's high-energy founder, Kevin Plank, wants to have a maker space at Port Covington for others with big ideas to take shape. And at a recent Investors Day, company officials revealed plans to manufacture some Under Armour shoes at Port Covington. Some facts and thoughts about Under Armour from Joanna Sullivan, editor of the Baltimore Business Journal. Joanna, nice to see you again.
Great having me. Thank you so much.
And Baltimore architect and commentator Klaus Philipson is with us, too. Welcome to you, Klaus. Nice to see you again. So, Joanna, let me start with you and what Emily Bragel of your staff reported this week, that Kevin Plank's Makerspace in Port Covington has its first tenant.
Yes, the Makerspace, which we now know is City Garage.
It's an old city-owned garage on Dickman Street.
Dickman Street in Port Covington. They have their first tenant. It's called the Foundry, and they're going to have woodworking, metalworking, where the public can go in, and also where you can have some workforce training by some of the companies, say Black & Decker, or other companies that need to train people. So it's a really fascinating thing. We've been covering this Port Covington expansion for many months now, and it's all starting to take shape.
At first, it was kind of a mystery about who was acquiring land down there. It turned out to be Kevin Plank, and there's going to be a large campus for Under Armour.
A huge campus for Under Armour. There's going to be a distillery on there. Kevin Plank is really into whiskey distilling.
Mm-hmm.
And this makerspace is really interesting because it shows how he's interested in developing manufacturing.
Well, that's what caught my eye at the Investors Day, this video that they showed called Building or Making Local for Local, the idea that you could have a fully automated factory making shoes, with people running machines, basically. So you wouldn't be employing as many people. There would be robotics and automation. But these plants would be in the countries where Under Armour has a market. So make local for local. Make shoes in the USA for your USA market. Make shoes in Brazil for your Brazilian market. And I don't know if it's revolutionary, but it sounds pretty bold to me. So, and that's supposed to be happening in the same building at first.
Yes, that is supposed to be happening in that building. I think right now they're going to be studying, shoemaking locally and how that will work. And also some innovation to see, shoes are going to be a big part of their business going forward. They're trying to get really big, and a lot of it is based on shoes.
They base that in part on their projection for a $7 billion sales year about 2 years down the road. Now they're headed toward $4 billion this year, I believe.
They're headed towards $4 billion, and they just want to keep getting bigger, and shoes play a big part of that. Women's apparel plays a big part of that. So it's interesting to see how it's all playing out.
So Kevin Plank and his brother have a lot of things going on. They have a hotel that's rising at the site of the old recreation pier in Fells Point. Kevin Plank has invested in Thoroughbred Racing, an old Sagamore farm, and he wants to have a Triple Crown winner some year. A few months ago, in his community architect blog, Klaus Philipson commented on Kevin Plank's role in Baltimore under the headline, "Do Cities Need Sugar Daddies?" With all his undertakings in the city that I just mentioned and in Baltimore County too, Klaus, it certainly sounds like Plank has stepped into that role as a municipal sugar daddy.
Yeah, first off, I wanted to congratulate you that you have congressmen call you.
Yeah, that's pretty
and
neat.
And give the respect to you that you deserve.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm very proud to be here on your last day. It is Innovation Week in Baltimore. All week long, innovation and makerspace is part of innovation. Yesterday in the bus garage at Plank's new facility was a huge party and pitches of innovators and makers, and it was presented there, you know, that this is the space. This intersection between a large corporation, and Dutch Ruppersberger said how important it is for Baltimore to have a optimistic, growing, prosperous company that is represented in Under Armour. So that's the one thing. The intersection between makerspace and a large corporation is very interesting, because the idea of making in makerspaces is the share economy and is the small, not capitalized idea people, the creative people that get in makerspaces a facility where it's cheaper and easier as a shared facility where machines and capital intensive pieces are offered to you for a low cost. So that's the idea of the makerspace. And we have this sort of bottom up coming from Barco. Will Hoffman is doing it on Greenmount Avenue. There's a large makerspace in the former parcel delivery place, and we have this with Kevin Plank doing it and overlapping it with his local for local idea, and there is like this convergence of technology where with 3D printing, or they Under Armour participated in making shoes out of fewer pieces, so there are only two pieces left and not so many, so you have a less labor intensive. And that allows you, along with the technology of robots, to make things where labor cost is high.
I have a question for you about a makerspace. Now, why would Kevin Plank want to have a makerspace for others to make things if they're not Under Armour products?
Well, you would have to ask him.
I wish we could. We've invited him to the show a few times.
But you know,
what do you make of it? What do you make of that?
Well, he's interested in innovation. He has positioned his company that makes sort of, you know, mundane things like sports shoes and
hoodies and leggings
and shirts.
Yeah.
But he has from the beginning on positioned themselves in the technology space by having the nanotechnology and the wicking fabric, and you know, so his shirts were supposedly be all different than the other shirts, and then he's continuing with his shoemaking with fewer pieces and more robotics and a new technology. And so he is pushing the envelope on how you can make traditional things in new ways. And so he is an innovator. He likes big, he says. He likes to make people say, wow. And so he goes now all out on so many tracks to do that.
I wonder, I don't know if you have any insight on this, Joanna, but how investors in Under Armour feel about these other ventures of Kevin Plank? Or does it not matter if you're returning $4 billion in sales?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the investors are thinking. Obviously, their stock has been doing well. I think it was down a little bit this week, but, you know, their stock is still really strong. He has really gone out and he's investing money in companies as well. Tessame, the salad dressing company, he's putting several million into them, and tech companies. So he is going well beyond his Under Armour brand.
Mm-hmm.
But he has said, you know, in talking to us, he has said that everything he does is for that brand. He wants to make the city better. So you're seeing investment because he needs to recruit people here, and he is doing business out of here. So he does say that, yes, it's in many ways selfish, but we're seeing lots of things that could help us all.
The modern factory worker in the vision of Kevin Plank is somebody who knows how to run those machines, even design them when they need to be redesigned, the machines that will make shoes. But talk about corporate citizenship just for a moment, would you, Klaus? I think this is an interesting thing to reflect on. I mean, it's one thing to have a big company in a community and a CEO who writes checks for charities. It's another thing to see somebody who's actually investing maybe beyond their core business for the good of a larger community.
And corporations and corporate cities and or large, rich, powerful people and their cities is an old story. And that's why I wrote in my blog about the Medici in Florence, who basically ran that city for hundreds of years and even elected the Pope and controlled who the Pope was. And in the course of doing that, they amassed a lot of power, but they also gave back, if you will. I mean, today you would say giving back to the community. It was maybe not exactly that because it was all limited to the higher classes. But nevertheless, the culture of the Renaissance in Florence would never have been that without the Medici. And so,
who were bankers, financiers too, right?
Right. And Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon. And so you would have a lot of examples in the U.S. and anywhere where corporations have given back to the community, mostly in culture. And it is an interesting and new aspect, you know, with the innovation technologies, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and now Under Armour, how they invest in the new trends and how our post-industrial society organizes itself. And the making, the decentralized making without a lot of capital of unique making, unique things in unique places without the economy of scale and without doing 10,000 of the same thing, it's a whole new age. And the local food production, the local, salad dressing that doesn't have, or ketchup that doesn't have corn syrup in it and stuff like that, that's part of this trend. It all together establishes a new economy, and Under Armour is part of that. And so far, it's a very smart thing because today everything is connected to everything. You can't just approach something laser sharp with one single-minded focus.
Thank you, Klaus. And Joanna Sullivan, I guess Kevin Plank personally keeps the BBJ pretty busy trying to cover him. So it'll be very interesting to watch how this plays out. By the way, that hub, that makerspace down there, I think it's supposed to be called the Lighthouse when it's fully
That'll
renovated.
That'll be part
right?
of it, yes. Yeah. That'll be part of the city garage.
Well, Lighthouse, of course, means that this is a beacon to shine.
Yeah. And,
you know, this is also an experience economy. So the distillery that he has doesn't really seem to fit, but it's an experience on the water. So this whole campus that he has in mind, like competing and beating the Nike campus, is going to be a Baltimore experience.
Klaus Philipson blogs at Community Architect. You can find a link to his blog on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Also, we tweeted out his latest blog post today. And you might want to read Do Cities Need Sugar Daddies, which was from a few months ago. But thank you very much for these reflections, Klaus. It has been great to have you on the Midday Show contributing to this program. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Joanna, thank you for all the contributions to this show from your talented staff at the Baltimore Business Journal. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. We've loved working with you.
The cover story of the print edition of the BBJ is?
We're looking at SAT scores. We have a list of the highest SAT scores in the area, and we looked at how it plays a role in economic development and how it really shows the sharp divide in economic development in the area.
I like the cover art. The cover art is a multiple choice question. The SAT is A, unnecessary, B, a thing of the past, C, still matters, and D, is unfair. Whoa, interesting. That's in this week's edition of the BBJ. Joanna Sullivan is the editor of the Baltimore Business Journal. Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you so much, Dan, and good luck.
Thank you. Guitarist Flavio Sala is back with us, aren't you? Aren't you in the studio, too?
Hello.
Nice to see you again,
nice
Flavio.
To see you again.
Flavio has a performance coming up this weekend, even though it's raining. So he's gonna entertain us a little bit during this hour and play us. Why don't you start a little tune there and take us into the next break? You ready? Are you still tuning? Oh, okay. Well, Flavio is going to be performing a little bit later in the hour. We're going to take a break here, and when we get back, we'll get a chat in on some sports with Milton Kent and Stan Charles of PressBox. Talk about the Ravens-Pittsburgh game. And in the second hour of the show, occasioned by the release of Ridley Scott's The Martian, starring Matt Damon, we'll be talking about movies about space exploration through the years, a new edition of Midday on Film coming up. A short break. We'll be right back. This is the Midday Show. That's Flavio Sala performing for us in Studio A, live from WYPR. Tonight he'll be at Germano's in Little Italy from 6 to 9 p.m. So you can catch him down there. This is part of the Modinari Arts Festival. This is coming to Little Italy this weekend that we're going to tell you about in a little while in this hour of the show. Thank you. Flavio, nice to see you again. Grazie.
Nice to see you in the last day of your... This is the last day...
This is the last day for that I'm going to host
on this program, yep. Yeah.
Sheila Cass...
We're going to miss you.
Yeah, thank you.
Really.
Sheila Cass will be taking over on Monday, so the show will still be here. Anyway, the Ravens finally won. That's good news. Justin Tucker kicked a 52-yard field goal in overtime. The Ravens won 23-20. Stan Charles, founder, publisher, and columnist of PressBoxOnline.com, with us in the studio again. Stan, nice to see you.
Great to see you. And Dan, I know you're not making a big deal of it. Believe me, I've got more experience than anybody in this town at doing last shows. A shock to the system to hear the news. Oh. And it's your last show, so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But you'll be sorely missed.
I've done a couple of other last shows, too, myself.
That's right. You did do
I had a
couple
TV
other
show,
last.
Remember?
That's right, yeah.
Roderick's
I don't
breakfast.
Think anybody's yeah. done as many as me in this town.
Yeah, maybe not, though. You might have the record there.
Anyway, last night was certainly not the Ravens' last game. It may have been their last stand of the season, but they put a good face on things and were lucky for the first time this season. And sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Yeah. Milton Kent is with us, too, by phone. Milton Kent, sports at large commentator here at WYPR, who teaches journalism at Morgan State. Hey, Milton, nice to have you with us.
It's nice to be with you, Dan. And all right, I'll do this now. My mom always says to give a person the flowers while they can smell them. So I'm going to give you a bouquet here just to say thanks for a terrific. I know you're not going away. This is the last show, but it's not the last show. We know that. But I just want to thank you for, geez, 30 plus years of friendship. And I just appreciate, as Stan said, you've done a tremendous job. This block, I mean, Sheila's going to do a great job, but we're going to miss you.
Thank you, Milton. Appreciate you saying that. So to talk
now
a little...
we can't disagree with them at all, right, Milton?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I was glad to see the Ravens pull this out. I think Stan's right about luck going the Ravens' way because that the kicker on the other team, Scobie, is that his name?
Josh Scobie.
Yeah, he didn't do so well, and then the team, the coach decided, Tomlinson decided he didn't have much confidence in him toward the end there. Let's go over that how the game finished, Stan.
Real quick, a tweet I just read from some national writer says that there's only been one kicker to kick field goals of over 50 yards at Heinz Field, and it's been done twice, and it's not the Steelers kicker.
It's not the Steelers
It's
guy.
Justin Tucker both times.
Really? And
yeah.
Tucker said that's a tough place
that
to kick.
That is a tough place. The field, the conditions of the field,
and
a little bit of the wind are a little tricky there.
Yeah.
The Ravens, their defense finally came to play. They had the benefit, a great benefit, and I think you'll agree with me, Milton, on this. Had Ben Roethlisberger been playing in that game, I have a feeling the Steelers would have won by 14, 17 points.
There's no question. They caught, perhaps for the first time all season, they caught a break. And it's not to demean or diminish Michael Vick. I think with a full week of preparation, things might have been different. I've heard suggestions, for instance, there was a drop touchdown pass early to the fabulous receiver, Antonio Brown. And one of the suggestions I've heard is that because Vick is left-handed, the spin on the ball went opposite to what Brown was expecting. Take that for what it's worth, but with a week of preparation, and another week as opposed to just 5 days, maybe that situation changes. But, the Ravens, for the first time, as Stan has alluded to, they got a break. They got breaks and took advantage of them. And that's, that's what teams that aspire to be good. I'm not sure the Ravens are good. I'm not even sure that they can top 500 this year.
Hmm.
But I think, that's what teams that aspire to be good have in their in their back pocket, that, they get breaks when they need them.
Now, Stan had a column saying five things the Ravens need to do to win this game. Of those five things, did they do them all? One was
no, they did not do them
well,
at all.
Was...
They didn't target Max Williams that much.
They left him out, didn't they?
No, they didn't target him. The defense did play better. There's no question about it. And they were pretty stout against the run, and that despite the fact that Le'Veon Bell rushed for 129 yards. He is a very unique running back. The biggest thing I saw missing from the Ravens' defense last night is four or five occasions they'd have somebody bottled up, one player would have it, and there was no gang tackling all the time. Mm-hmm. That was missing to me from the Ravens' effort last night.
So what do we have here? What are the Ravens' prospects the rest of the way? Milton, what would you say about that? You think they're just a 500 team?
If that. They're just too many holes, too many problems at this point for me to envision them doing much past 500, if that. I'm not thrilled with the receiving core beyond Steve Smith, and if you have to rely on a guy who's 35 years old and in his last tour, that doesn't help you very much. I am, you know, as Stan alluded to, I like Max Williams, the new tight end. I'm just not sure that that's going to be enough. Joe Flacco, to me, continues to be a guy who, big contract and a Super Bowl win, and MVP notwithstanding, I just can't put my money on him. And there are enough defensive holes now. The pass rush with Terrell Suggs, and let's not forget, it's not just Terrell Suggs' absence that's being felt. It's also Haloti Ngata. Those are two integral parts of that defense from last year that are gone.
You know, John Harbaugh, I asked a question 2 weeks ago at his press conference. He looked at me like I was from Mars, and I compared Suggs' injury to the injuries he had 2 years ago after they chose to get Anquan Boldin out of town. And then in the first game, Jacoby Jones got run into by his own teammate. This is the opening
right.
game in
remember
Denver.
That. Remember that.
And the
mm-hmm.
next week, Dennis Pitta broke his hip. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
he was out with two targets. I think you make a very important point. They're missing that leadership, also the caliber of play that Ngata brings, but more so losing two leaders out of the center of that defensive front is not an easy thing to make up for.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just one other thing. I'm going to take you back to a play, and I don't remember exactly when it happened last year, but it was in the Dolphins game. The Ravens go for a fourth down deep in their territory. And sometimes, there was an old adage in basketball. People used to say that when Charles Oakley, who played for the Knicks, if you were guarding Charles Oakley, you always hoped that he made his first shot, because then he would shoot all night long, and he wasn't a particularly good shooter. I think what's happened with John Harbaugh, I think he's become foolhardy. There are a couple of decisions last night, not just going for the fourth down, but there are just a couple of decisions that he made last night and throughout the season that just make you wonder what exactly is going on with him. Why at this stage of the game, the guy's got a Super Bowl title in his back pocket. Why is he coaching as if he's coaching for his life, unless there's something that we don't know about?
Hmm. Do you have that sense, Stan?
I hadn't gotten a sense of that. I think the guy has become sort of so enamored with hearing himself talk on certain occasions. I mean, that whole thing where he brought up Donald Trump's idea of the wall,
yeah.
building the wall.
Yeah.
Who the hell cares what you – you're a football coach.
Yeah.
Don't start preaching to me about building immigration walls.
Yeah.
Win football games. And, he wasn't – it would be one thing if he were asked, hey, John, what do you think of building – he just brought it up as – he says, hey, it's not that complicated. I think it's a little bit of that he just sort of buys in to the fact he's a genius when he's not. I think he's a good, solid football coach, and he should stick to trying to win football games.
The Steelers are now 2-2. According to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, in blowing this 13-point lead early in the second half, usually they say that that's the kind of lead that almost guarantees a victory in this division and for the Steelers. It was the first time they had blown such a big lead in 51 years.
Wow.
According to statisticians at Football Outsiders, quoted in the Gazette today. So I want to just talk about the Orioles a little bit because Stan's here. And so we had a disappointing Orioles season. It could be a disappointing Ravens season. The Ravens now 1-3. But Anyway, let's talk about the way the Orioles have sort of wrapped up here, and what do you see happening in the offseason? Everyone's wondering about that.
I think it's going to be the most fascinating offseason in Peter Angelo's tenure as Orioles owner. He's clearly at a crossroads, and it's not an easy crossroads, but he's got to step up into fully into the 21st century and spend some necessary dollars. You know, and Buck goes out of his way to always say that it's not even an issue. You know, we got more than enough, you know, salary that we can spend. But the bottom line is, if Chris Davis is not back next year, all the fixing of the starting rotation isn't going to amount to a hill of beans, because they're going to be a team that is really going to be sorrowful at scoring runs. So it's an unbelievably complicated puzzle that they've got. And in the midst of all that, the National Sharks are saying that Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette are not getting along well, that it's come to a boiling point. So that's going to be fascinating. And you know that Buck is a darling of Peter Angelos, and Dan Duquette, after what took place last offseason, yeah, is not so much a darling, but he does have 3 years of probably about $1.7 million a year to $2 million a year in salary, and it's not easy to see Peter Angelos eating that. But I wonder if you could find some reason that Peter will terminate him and then claim that he doesn't really owe him the money.
Yeah, and he can shuffle off to Toronto.
Well, he's not going to shuffle off Toronto there, because they hired Mark Shapiro for that position.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so he can't go there.
No.
All right. Now, Milton, what's it going to cost to keep Chris Davis?
Wow.
$80
million? $150 million. $150 million at 6 years.
Yeah, I mean,
That's what you're talking
How
about.
How old is he?
He's 30, and they won't have the excuse. Flavio is
look at Flavio's eyes.
Flavio's eyes were.
what do soccer players make in Italy? Do you know?
Can you play like a high priced money ditty there?
Mucho lira,
euro.
Well, you're looking at
mucho euro now.
When you're looking at what Joey Votto makes,
I forgot they're on the euro now. Who's that?
When you look at what Joey Votto makes in Cincinnati and Giancarlo Stanton makes in Miami, those are just a couple of the examples. And Prince Fielder, those are a couple of examples that point toward close to a $25 million a year for 6 years. And that's why it's hard to imagine Peter swallowing that. But, boy, it's going to be tricky.
Flavio.
And further complicating that is that both Chris Davis and Matt Wieters are both, and they're both free agents, are both Scott Boras clients.
And so is Wei-Yin Chen.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
oh boy,
there won't be anything resembling a hometown discount. The Orioles are going to have to shell out, you know, big lira,
or euros.
And the complication there, Milton, is if they don't shell it out for Chris, what does Adam Jones start to think about his decision to have come here? What does Manny Machado start to think about staying here long-term?
What do I think about buying tickets?
Exactly.
Well, huh? And what about that?
Exactly. Dan, you make a good point.
Flavio, do you know the song "Get Out the Checkbook, Mr. Angelos"? You know that? You don't know that song?
Just a couple bars of that?
Hey, Dan, we know that Peter doesn't know that song.
Right. Hey, Milton, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for everything, Dan. All right. I appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Milton.
Milton
Same
Kent,
here.
Sports at Large commentator for WYPR, and Stan Charles, founder, publisher, and columnist of PressBoxOnline.com. Stan, thanks for being here again.
Thank you for your friendship
and
appreciation of what we do.
We'll take a little break here, and when we come back, I've got some things to tell you about this weekend, and Flavio's going to play a song for us. And welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Roderick's in this segment of the show. We'd like to tell you about a couple of events coming up this weekend. Despite the rain, despite the weather, that's Flavio Sala playing for us in Studio A again. Flavio is going to be performing tonight at Germano's Piattini in Little Italy. And we're going to tell you about an art festival taking place in Little Italy. But first, we'll go over to the Eastern Shore, okay? We'll go to Chestertown to tell you about the wonderful Wizarding World of Harry Potter. In Chestertown, Maryland, Harry Potter Festival. Tess Hogan's joining us by phone. Tess Hogan's is vice president of the festival board and the theater manager for the Garfield Center for Arts, which will temporarily turn into Hogwarts. So, Tess, thank you for joining us here on Midday.
Thank you. you, Dan. I'm so excited to be here.
You had a Harry Potter Festival last year, right?
We did. Last year was actually our first year, which no one believes. But we did have a festival last year, and it's going to be very similar this year. We have our whole downtown, and downtown Chestertown is a sort of a historic colonial water town, and we transform it into a recognizable wizarding world, from Hogsmeade to Diagon Alley to Hogwarts.
And how did it work out last year?
It was fabulous. It was a lot of fun. A couple of us just started thinking, hey, wouldn't it be neat if we had like a Harry Potter party? And that sort of exploded, and the response was incredible. We had all these businesses transform their own shops into businesses from the Harry Potter world, and they sold Harry Potter things, and we had Quidditch games, and we had Harry Potter vendors, and we had the Garfield Center for the Arts, which is where I am the theater manager, transforms into Hogwarts School, and we had classes here, wizard classes, and the little kids are able to go into the school and be sorted into their houses and take wizard classes, and it's really magical.
And the weather was supposed to rain for the next couple of days. Will that have any effect on it, or is it mostly indoors?
A lot of it is indoors, and we've been watching the weather really closely and telling everybody who is in the know, use your impervious charms. We will be fine this weekend. It's looking like, in Chestertown at least, we're not going to have a lot of rain tomorrow, and so it'll be a little windy and probably overcast, but that never hurt anybody, so...
Okay,
we'll
so if you're a muggles or a wizard, you just show up, and especially if you have a costume?
And there's going to be a lot of people in costume, but it's not required. The whole festival, it's very loose. There are scheduled activities all around town throughout the day. If you come to the Garfield Center for the Arts, which is right at 210 High Street in Chestertown, you can get a map, a schedule festival, festival schedule and a map that'll show you a map of the town with all the different places that you can go. You can go to Ollivander's and buy a wand. If you need a wand, you can be measured for one. We have a Quidditch cup.
Excuse me. Tess, I have a question.
Oh, sure.
Do adults do this? Do adults get dressed up like wizards?
Oh, they sure do.
They do? So
they
is
definitely
it,
do.
Is this like the new Trekkies kind of thing?
Hey.
I mean, I know Harry Potter was very popular, but there are no new books coming, right?
They've re-released the books, and they've actually just republished them with drawings. That's the big thing coming in November.
I don't mean to diminish it at all. I'm just wondering. It lives on in people who want to dress up like a Harry Potter character.
It doesn't seem to be going away, which I am thrilled about. I grew up with Harry Potter. I'm 27 years old, and so I was in middle school, and I was around the same age as Harry when the first book came out, and so I've sort of grown up with him. And the thing that everybody forgets is, you know, we have the generation of, you know, people in their 20s who grew up with it, but then those parents who had to read the stories to those kids, you know, also started to enjoy it. And now there's a new generation of young kids and their parents who are getting into it. So I tell everybody it's really for ages like 7 to 75, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's great, Tess. So on with the show in Chestertown this weekend at the Garfield Center for the Arts, the wonderful wizarding world of Harry Potter.
Absolutely. We have, we've got a all-ages dance party at Hogwarts Saturday night, and that's going to be a lot of fun. $5 for everybody. Just come in, wear your wizarding best, and it's a great time.
All right, Tess. Well, good luck with it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Flavio Sala is in the studio, as I said. Flavio's repertoire includes Italian classics, Bach, Mozart, Venezuelan music as well.
Venezuelan music, yes.
Now, Flavio is performing tonight in Little Italy, 6 to 9 p.m., at Germano's Piattini in the cabaret there. And the cabaret is made possible by Sid Wolf. Sid Wolf is executive producer of the cabaret at Germano's Piattini. But also, Sid's in the studio to tell us about this new venture this weekend, this rainy weekend, Little Italy, Baltimore's Madonari Arts Festival. Sid, how are you?
I'm good, Dan.
It's nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So, Madonare, that's the word Madonna is in Madonare.
Right, right.
What is Madonari art? What is that?
So the Madonari, actually, I brought with me this entire contingent of Italian artists from Florence that kind of put you on end.
Well, they're eating the pizza now.
Well, I brought you the red beet ravioli. They're eating the pizza.
Okay.
But Madonari, so in the Renaissance times, the vagabond artists, that would be the equivalent of your Shakespearean actors, would go from town to town, festival to festival, and they would draw on the street with pastel chalk gorgeous copies of the Madonna, you know, all of the famous art. And, of course, they did this because they wanted to curry favor with the church, which was the greatest benefactor of artists at the time. And over the years, the Madonari street painting has actually evolved into its own genre. It's very ephemeral. You know, it's not like you're creating something forever. You're creating something to be enjoyed. It's the art of creating. The people who are watching feel like they're a part of this great experience. And it's very much the equivalent of what the cabaret does with performing artists. You know, you're in the audience, and it's this energy is just unbelievable.
So your idea was to have the Modinari come to Baltimore, to Little Italy,
right,
and sort of take over High Street, right?
Sure.
And are they doing that, even though it's going to be wet out there?
Are you kidding? This is the most exciting challenge that's hit Little Italy. Yeah, you know, it was Germano's idea, you know, to bring this visual arts to Little Italy. And High Street, listen, it is the highest street, right? That's why it's called South High.
That's the name.
We don't have the same flooding problems that Fells Point has. So, you know, this was supposed to be the busiest weekend for all of Baltimore. And I do believe that we are one of the only events that is certainly continuing. We've arranged for tenting. So as we are speaking, they are putting up these fabulous tents from Pratt to Eastern on South High. Don't forget, there are 60 artists. They're all, right now, they're at my restaurant. It's very exciting.
Are they American and European?
Yes. A lot of people from Baltimore, because, of course, with MICA and BSA, you've got quite a cross here. But also Florence and New York and West Coast. And we've got West Virginia. They're coming from all over.
So the show goes on. The Modinari Arts Festival is going to happen in Little Italy, even if it's raining.
Yeah, and I should say there are also, including Flavio, about 90 performing artists that will be in every restaurant in Little Italy. The Baltimore School for the Arts Senior Acting Ensemble is going to be a roving equivalent of the Shakespearean troupe, going from restaurant to restaurant, opera singers from restaurant to restaurant. And Flavio tonight, it's a marvelous. Flavio's just the best for me.
Flavio, are you familiar with the Madonari in Italy? Have you ever seen them?
No, never seen, but I've heard about.
I look forward to
something I didn't follow.
Some of this is three-dimensional too, right?
Oh yeah. The modern Madonari do these incredible 3D and even 4D technology is used now.
Wow. So, if someone is intrepid and wants to go out there anyway and see it, you have tents, and they want to have a positive experience and go down to Little Italy, what hours are we talking about? Is it today and tomorrow? Or?
It starts today, but, you know, I would suggest that people come out tomorrow when the rain stops, because the rain will stop tomorrow, and from 11 a.m. until 10 p.m., both Saturday and Sunday. Now, we also have a children's chalk center in the Damimo parking lot, and it's a great opportunity for the little ones to do their own masterpieces.
This sounds great, Sid Wolf, and congratulations for getting it at least in place for the weekend. And it must have been a logistical challenge to get these tents out there, but you wanted to go on with it.
You know, it's all been a challenge, but it's so worth it. I mean, Little Italy, all the residents, all of the restaurants, all of the businesses, everyone is on board, and it's really exciting.
It's a great idea. So unique, too. So good luck with that.
Thank you.
And Flavio, what are you going to play for us now?
You want to listen to some Venezuelan music?
Sure.
Yeah. This is a Venezuelan
vals.
It's
Flavio Sala. Yeah. Beautiful. What's that? What is that called?
Venezuelan Waltz.
Venezuelan Waltz.
Waltz.
Excellent. you're going to be at Germano's tonight, 6 to 9 p.m. A portion of the ticket proceeds will be donated to the support of this new arts festival in Little Italy, the Modenari Arts Festival that Sid Wolf's been telling us about. And then October 10th, which is next Saturday.
Next Saturday, yes.
You had a beautiful poster here. Flavio's going to be at Merrick Hall at Goucher College with a concert. I think I'm going to go to that, October 10th, 7:30 p.m.
You will love it.
Very
it's,
good.
It's this is my first production here in America, so I'm very happy, and also because I will have a lady in jazz pianist from Cuba has a special guest, Cesar Orozco. We played already
at Germano's.
At Germano's a few months ago, and I'm going to release a new album. Well, it's a pre-release. We're featuring Steve Howe and all the Mi Guitarra e Mis Amores is with 16 pieces from my favorite repertoire and artist, and this is going to be a great night. So tickets are advance ticket $20 or at door the day of the event, 25 from my website, on my website, which is...
I got it right here, flaviosala.com. That's F-L-A-V-I-O-S-A-L-A, Flavio Sala. The last time you were here, you were going to have an online concert. Remember
that's
that?
That's true, yes.
How did that work out?
Very well, very well. I'm still trying to build a fan base online because it's another audience. It's just something that you have to take care of, and we are going to stream this the concert at Goucher online.
So this will be online too.
This will be online too, and I'm very happy because you know people are we have to convince people that this is a different experience but still enjoyable because. Sometimes they think it could be like watching a video on YouTube or something, but it's not like this. It's really beautiful because it's still a live concert, and from all over the world, you know, they can connect from.
Flavio, thank you for coming in here to play again.
My
for
pleasure.
Us. I think you should play us out of this hour, okay?
Okay.
Anything you like. You can just start now if you'd like to. So Flavio Sala tonight at Germano's and then October 10th at Goucher at the Merrick Hall. Way to go, Flavio. And Sid Wolf, who brought Flavio to us because he was performing at Germano's. Good luck with the Modenari.
Thank you.
I think what would be neat is that if you have a success this weekend, even with the weather, and then you keep a Modenari around and you give him a little place in Little Italy, he or she, to do their thing.
It's a fabulous idea.
And people come down to the restaurants and they see somebody drawing with chalk in the street somewhere.
That's right, just like in Florence.
Got to find a little, I know it's hard to find parking there, but you got to find a space for the Modenari too. All right, we got 1 minute left in this hour? That's right, because Luke Spicknell is my director. See him there? He's a fine young man. I keep telling him to wear neckties, but he looks good anyway. He's a fine young man. He's just giving me the signal that we have less than a minute left in this hour of the show. We got another hour of midday coming up. It's Midday on Film with Christopher Llewellyn Reed and Bill Uren this time. We're going to take a break here for lunch, brought to us by Joe Squared Pizza. Joe Squared is located at 133 West North Avenue in the Station North neighborhood, but they're changing location soon. And they're at the Inner Harbor at Power Plant Live, and you can find them on the web at joesquared.com. Please stay tuned for the news, and then we'll see you for the second hour of our show, Midday on Film. This is more from Flavio Sala.